on this episode of the Autumn Windbags. Welcome to episode 100. Yeah, three digis, baby. We got here. We're going to give out our episode 100 awards. We're also going to talk about John Gruden's legacy and which players should be looking over their shoulder for rookies to take their spots. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
There it is! Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto. Let's have some extra special super duper fun today. Episode 100.
We made it.
One and some double D's. One, a big dick, and it's two balls. Right
100.
There. 100. 100.
100.
I can't believe we made it this far. I thought I'd be dead by now. But we're actually still cranking it out. 100 actual full episodes. Again, we do a lot of like little YouTube shorts and stuff, live chats, things like that. But 100 podcasts of our Wednesday recorded show and post-game shows. 100. It's a big
love
deal.
It's yeah, big man. Deal. It's big deal. It's not number one bullshit. It's
no,
big deal.
Not at all. That's why you're all dressed up, collared yeah, shirt, polo tie. Full disclosure, I'm in Phoenix for work. I planned on bringing a tuxedo t-shirt. Maybe I was going to take the sleeves off, cut it into a V-neck. I don't know. I was going to have fun with it. Forgot it at home. I was so excited about episode 100 that I completely forgot to pack my tuxedo t-shirt.
I'm the only one that took this serious. Like it sounds yeah. like.
I'm dragging ass into this show.
That's all right.
I'm embarrassed.
We'll make it up. We'll make it up.
Episode 200. I'm going to wear an actual tuxedo to make up for it.
You know what? I think that we should do that.
Actual by episode 200, we're going to have our full our own studio. We're going to have
we need to good have lighting. 200.
We're going to have a stripper pole in the back just kind of dancing around like it's a Kid Rock concert.
It's going to be a stripper back there. There's going to be a stripper. I didn't designate a gender for that stripper, but there's going to be one. We're gonna have one.
I so thought it went without being said the gender, but apparently not. So with that, our question of the day, and this is very, very self-absorbed episode. I don't know if you guys noticed that. Normally the other 99 episodes are for you guys. It's
this
for Raider Nation.
This is us. This is our
this is us just jerking each other off for 60 minutes. Hope you're ready for it. Giving Soto the stranger. So the last 100 episodes, what's your favorite moment from the first 100 episodes of the Autumn Windbags? This is like, you know, like a sitcom that they when they get lazy, they're like, oh, we don't want to come up with like we're in season 12. Let's just do like a recap show. It's kind of what we're doing today.
Remember when that happened? You sit around a table, like having some fucking mimosas or something.
Yeah, like memory lane just starts cruising through. Favorite moment
yesterday.
From 100 episodes. We're gonna play for you guys our awards. We gave out multiple awards for some of our best guests, best moments, things that we love from the first 100 episodes. But for you guys in the comment section, let us know favorite moment from the first 100 episodes. Rory brought up a great one when we did our post game show for Raiders Chargers final game of the regular season. The craziest Raider game decades, maybe in decades. Craziest NFL game of the season.
Yeah, for sure.
When we put our foots on the Chargers' neck in overtime.
Stomped them into the toilet. Yeah.
Spit in their face. Sent them packing. Sent us to the playoffs.
Flushed them.
And when we opened up the post-game show, we just opened it up with us just hysterically laughing for like 45 seconds.
That was like... We were like, all right, you ready? You ready? Cool, man. What a fucking win. Wow, crazy. All right, let's go.
Game face, let's go.
And then you started it, and we just looked at each other, and...
We lost it.
We lost it, dude. It was hilarious.
If I was an older man, I probably would have had an aneurysm or a heart attack.
I peed a little bit. I'm a little older than you. I peed a little bit.
Yeah, see, I'm under 40. I kept it together. You're a little over 40, so some crucial organs
Just plus, I live alone, so yeah.
Shit. No one would have found you. A lot of great moments throughout the last 100 episodes, Soto.
Yes, sir. You know, it's crazy. Like, when we first started this, I didn't think we'd be on this long. I think we probably would get sick of each other and be like, ah, fuck this. Mm-hmm. But it just, like, it just kept being fun. And, you know, the listeners kept engaged and kept us kind of on our toes. And fucking shit just kept happening to this team, man.
Yeah.
And it's like, it was just a drama-filled season. And we just kept pushing and pushing. And it just got more and more fun as we went along.
And I think I'm with you. Like, that's what really kept me going. Because when we started this podcast, it was you, me, and Rory have been on a text chain for like 8 years just talking about the Raiders. Like, let's just take this text chain and put it, you know, talk it into microphones and put it online. And that's what I thought it would be. But we got such a good response and so many people who were engaged. I was like, I have more to say. I think you guys have more you want to hear. That's when we started cranking out daily content on YouTube and all this other stuff we started doing and doing
live shows and chats and all that.
Lives. Yeah. All this extra stuff. And
guests, like, getting guests. Yeah. Getting good guests.
And you guys just responded so well, and you guys, and that fueled me. I know it fueled you too, Soto. That's kind of what made us want to instead of this just being like 1 hour a week, let's just, you know, bullshit about the Raiders. It's like, I'm like deep in the dark web getting like Josh Jacobs, like touch stats and like, you know, making sure I'm getting everything right, booking these guests, and it changed how we approached it. And it's all because of you guys.
Yeah, man. It's you guys shaped what we do. You guys kept telling us by your views, by your subscriptions, by your comments and all that. You guys let us know what you liked about what we were doing. And it's different. I mean, one of the reasons I said before, one of the reasons that RJ and I don't break down really that tape at all is because Tape Don't Lie does that. And they do it great. Carl does that. They do a great job. It's like, well, we're different. We want to let them do that. That's their thing. They're great at it. If you want that, that's where you can go to see that. But we're different. We talk about the same thing with a different perspective. And you guys have told us what you like that we do, and we try to do more of it.
Everything you thought you loved about the Raiders, plus sophisticated dick and fart jokes and Soto and a bolo tie.
This fucking tie is not staying tight, bro.
It's gotta, I don't know, snug. What's going on, buddy. I don't know.
My neck is too fucking fat. My neck is like, no, my heart, my freaking blood pressure is pushing it down. Like, it's loose. Every heartbeat, it's loose.
Admit it. This is the first time you've worn a tie in like 10 years.
Yeah. I usually go CEO style. I usually just have the open shirt.
Plunging V-neck, little chest hair.
No. Just the top button unbuttoned, just right here. But the CEO style, I have the high collar tight and the suit. So
I feel like you should really embrace the Tony Soprano, like multiple buttons down, wife beater top right above.
I mean, I'm wearing a wife beater. I don't know if you can tell, I'm wearing a wife beater right now.
Once you start sweating, I'll know. So what is your favorite moment from the first 100 episodes of the Autumn Windbags?
Let us know, man.
Let us know. Comment section. We'll talk about it. A lot of things to remember. All right. So it is officially award season.
Yeah.
And it's the good kind of award season. Here's an award show you're actually going to want to listen to. An award show you're actually going to want to watch.
Break out the red carpet, or your redhead neighbor, I think. Have her bring out her red carpet.
Bring out her red carpet. Lightning bolt carpet. Yeah, yeah. So we took, I went through all 100 episodes mentally. I didn't watch every single one of them. It's thousands of hours. Yeah. But I went through a good chunk of it and was like trying to remember good things that we did, funny things that happened. And we gave out some awards. Most of them are for guests. Not all of them.
Not all.
Not all, but most of them are. Here's the award for the best bare knuckle elevator fighting champion award.
That there was an issue in an elevator, and I was like, I wouldn't want to ask you that question about money, just in case we're ever in an elevator, because you are the heavyweight bare knuckle elevator champion. That's all I got to say.
Well, let me just say that, you know, in all the street fights I've had and fights on the beach, you know, as a surfer and everything, I like fighting in close quarters. So I'd rather fight in an elevator so there's not too much room to move, because I like using my elbows when it comes down to, you know, getting things done. And all kidding aside, Frank and I are friends. We just worked together last weekend, right? We're in the octagon together. And I think Kenny Florian put out a funny tweet. He goes, nice to see that, you know, the bloodbath didn't happen all over again. You know, when that situation happened, and USC Folklore did that animated thing on it, and it was so true to fact, all that was through there. And let's face it, Frank was in there, and they interviewed him. And, you know, what happened, happened. I got to give credit to Dana White. I really, listen, when I get in a fight, I'll tell my, in the past, you know, it's my friends or my buddies, but I'm not going to, hey, I got in a fight. Guess what I did? I'm not that kind of guy. Dana was telling everybody.
Dana stir the pot.
Two days after,
he's a fight promoter, right? He's trying to get money on the rematch.
Oh man!
2 days after Frank and I went at it, Mikey Burnett. Remember Mikey Burnett?
Yeah, old school.
Little Mikey Burnett walks up to me, goes, "Hey, Buff, I heard you took it to Trigg, right?" And I go, "Mikey, how do you know? I've told like five people." He goes, "Dana's telling everybody."
Oh Jesus.
So that was our interview with Bruce Buffer, the veteran voice of the Octagon for the UFC, talking about the time he beat up Frank Trigg, a two-time welterweight UFC title challenger, now currently an MMA ref, in an elevator. And he kind of gave a little bit more of the backstory that he didn't give to everybody else about how Dana White just told the entire world about how Bruce Buffer beat up a former UFC contender.
Just telling everybody that shit. Frank Trigg's like, quit telling people that shit, Dana. Goddamn.
Like, that gave, like, a part of me's like, all right, like, you've got to be pretty embarrassed. Because, like, Buffer's, you know, he's no spring chicken. Like, he's in shape, right? Takes care of himself. He's not some feeble old man, but he ain't young. He ain't young.
Yeah,
he is. And Frank Trigg fought Matt Hughes twice for the UFC title. And you got your ass kicked.
Yeah. I mean, circumstances, Buffer's a little bit bigger guy. Mm-hmm. Frank Trigg. He was already retired, right?
Yeah.
So he'd been retired. Who knows? Some of these guys, the fight game, some guys, when they retire, it's like, holy shit. Like in like a matter of like 3 months, you're like, Jesus Christ, have you been in a gym since you retired?
It's like, so, when you see some of these like offensive linemen retire and their playing weight was like 320. And then you see them again, they're like
200.
235. Yeah.
Yeah. They just freaking
like staggy, lean. Just like not holding the weight up. They're like, all right.
Yeah. It's hard, man. It's hard to hold that weight up. Trust me. I know.
That was great talking to Bruce Buffer. Obviously, that was fun. He announces the Raiders at Allegiant Stadium. And he did the Pro Bowl, Super Bowl, maybe.
We never know. Next couple Bowl. Years. Yeah.
Few people bring the energy like old Bruce Buffer. All right, our next award. This was our second interview ever. Adam Hill from the Las Vegas Review Journal. We had a good like hour-long conversation talking everything Raiders.
He's awesome, man.
He's great. We gotta have him back soon.
Well, yeah, because now they're able to go into the locker rooms now, so they're gonna have more access, gonna have a lot more shit to talk about.
So Adam's one of the guys that he'll open up, like, and I talk about a lot on this show. Like, there's a lot of media who have certain allegiances, and that's how they make their living. They're either, you know, I just kind of say whatever the team wants me to say, and I'm just kind of their mouthpiece, and I get breaking news for that exchange. And there's other people that they'll say whatever players want and push their agenda, or push whatever agents want, push their agenda, and they get breaking news, and that's kind of their thing. Adam's neither. Adam's just a
legit reporter. He's like, legit, I'm a journalist.
Just beat reporter. And he has relationships, right? And he still plays the game to some point, but there's certain journalists when they say something, it's like, okay, that's definitely coming straight from the coach, or that's coming definitely straight from this manager. Not that it's wrong, not that it's incorrect or a lie.
But there's an agenda attached to it.
Exactly. Like, there was, I scratch your back, you scratch my back.
Yeah.
Adam's just like, this is what I see, this is what I think.
Yeah.
And that's what he's great at. But the best part was how he ended the interview. This award is the taking one for the team, but not your team award.
The reputation that Raiders fans have, and by the way, I did get beat up in the black hole when I was 22.
That was really
fun. Oh yeah,
it's a badge of honor, man.
That's awesome. Yeah. Tell us the story. Like, what were you wearing? A Bills jersey? Is that why?
Yeah. So I was a Bills fan, and I have a Raiders fan friend who had tickets in the black hole in Oakland. And would fly out from Vegas every weekend. And he's like, hey, I will give you my seat, you know, my extra seat, if you wear a Bills jersey and you're obnoxious.
Some friend. Yeah. He wanted to see me get your shit kicked in.
Yeah. And he said, and you're obnoxious. Like, be a fan like you always are.
Did you fuck his girlfriend?
Yeah. I went to the bathroom in the Coliseum, which is just an adventure. Yeah. And as I'm coming back, one of the guys from the black hole is like, you're not coming back to your seat. Like, that's it. You're done. Like, go sit somewhere else. And I was like, wait, what? And I told the security guy, I was like, hey, my seat's down there and this guy's not letting me go. And he goes, yeah, it's for the best. Don't sit there. Like, okay.
We can't protect you.
So then after the game, the Raiders won. And I believe they lost the first four games of the year. They won this game to maybe go 1-4 or 2-4, whatever it was. And I'm getting so much shit on the way out. You know, wear the Bills jersey from the same people that I saw in the black hole, whatever. And they're just like screaming at me. And so I held up. I was like, you're still 1-4. 1-4. He's holding it up. 1-4.
You were asking.
And then, yeah, for
sure. Get me pissed off right now, man.
And then I felt somebody like running up behind me and just kicked me as hard as they could in the back of my leg. And I went down and then just got pummeled.
Yeah.
And it was so bad. Like, I was so disoriented. Oh, I got on the BART and I went the wrong way. I went into San Francisco instead of going out to my family's house in the East Bay where I was going to go stay. Jeez. Yeah, it was ugly, but I deserved it. Like, I wasn't like, I didn't get up and like, how could these people do this? I'm like, yeah, that's what I deserve.
It takes a real G to do like all seven steps of that process.
Yeah.
Like, Adam's like, okay, yeah, I accept your terms. I will be a drunk asshole in the black hole wearing an opposing AFC jersey. I will get as drunk as you say I'm supposed to. I'll lose the game and still continue talking shit. I will take the ass kicking like a man and not be bitter about it afterwards because I know I was asking for it.
It's a thug right there.
That's awesome.
There's reports that that there's still a chalk outline of Adam, that bridge, that like penitentiary bridge.
Bridge to the bar?
Yeah, to the bar.
With his leg all mangled from the dude kicking it from the side.
It's the third third hot dog person, the third one right next to that, right there. That's where he is.
It's like those are I think those are the stories that are gonna kind of like disappear with the Raiders in Las Vegas. Little nicer stadium. There isn't like as many like seedy back alleys right at Allegiant Stadium. It's like in the heart of the nice part of Vegas, you know? Like, there's a couple strip clubs across the street. Crazy Horses right there, Hustler Clubs right there. So you can find trouble if you want to, but it's not like you're forced to do, you know, the penitentiary bridge just to go from your house to the stadium, right?
I mean, I was a Raider fan. I was still a little freaked out about that shit. I'm like, oh, great. Because it's like everybody's – if you never made this walk before, this bridge is not super wide for the amount of people that are in the game.
Yeah.
It just isn't. And when you start walking one direction, you get some fucking jack off like walking the other way. And you're like, dude, what the fuck? And it's just you're crowded and everyone's fucking drunk and they've been in the fucking sun for like 5 hours. And it's a lot of people for having been that sauced up and out in the sun.
So that's the taking one for the team, but not your team award. So that was our second interview ever.
Congrats, Adam.
Congrats, Adam. This was our first interview ever. We were only a couple weeks into the show. This is our very first guest. He and I hosted a SiriusXM MMA radio show together for a while. So that's how I got to know him. And he gave us some insight into a Raider legend. So this is the Keeping It Classy Award.
It's like everything. He can do it all. And he's calling out route combinations pre-snap every single game.
He's also the only guy that can pull off like the tuxedo jacket with the neckerchief instead of the tie.
The ascot. Yeah.
He dresses like he's Will Smith's butler, but he pulls it off. You know what I mean? Yeah, he looks great.
It became like his thing on TV, the ascot that he's wearing. He wore those in Green Bay on road trips, and we didn't even have to wear suits. We just had, like, McCarthy basically said, if you're wearing jeans, don't have holes in them, like, wear decent pants and a decent shirt. Like, you don't have to wear a suit. Try to wear a suit with an ascot and a big overcoat. Like, I think he liked when it got cold because his wardrobe really opened up. He could pull out these different coats, a mink maybe. He's just Charles, like a super classy individual. He's got his own wine. Like, he's really into wine. A lot of DBs love wine. I know it's big now, like LeBron and basketball players, but that was a big thing that I saw. And Charles was like spearheading that in our whole DB room. Everyone, they all were like sommeliers by the time they were done there, it seems.
So we got the origin story of the Charles Woodson ascot. And I learned what an ascot is. I always just called it the neckerchief people wear instead of a tie. It's like, oh yeah, it's an ascot.
Ascot,
thank
sir.
You, AJ Hawk. Thank you.
Yeah, very informative. You know, that's the kind of guests we have on here. You're going to talk about the Raiders. You're also going to learn something about life. Mm-hmm. For sure.
I love how Charles Woodson is just like, he has the like utmost respect of everybody, and he's just the biggest pretty boy, despite being just a Hall of Fame defensive player.
Oh, yeah.
He can ride both sides of that fence. Sommelier, Ascot. I love the line how it's just like, yeah, once winter arrived, his wardrobe really got to open up because now he can just add more layers and more flair. And yet he will pick that ball from you. He will sack your ass. He will knock your ass out.
He makes whiskey.
All man.
Or scotch, man. Whatever it was. Yeah. All man. All that is man for sure.
So the next one is a friend of mine, another guy from mixed martial arts, Jimmy Smith. Not the football player, Jimmy Smith. He's the current WWE commentator. He used to commentate for UFC Bellator. He's on SiriusXM, same as me. And he's a lifelong Steelers fan. Diehard lifelong Steelers fan. And so the week of Raiders Steelers in week two, I come on. You couldn't do this interview for some reason. For some reason, you weren't
able to. I don't remember why either.
But you couldn't do this interview. Just Jimmy and I bullshitting Raiders Steelers. And at the end, we made a bet. So this is the Man of Your Word Award.
Okay, so we both, for those who don't know, we both have shows on SiriusXM, the same channel, Fight Nation. The winner gets to write up a 100-word essay.
Mm-hmm.
And the loser has to call into the other person's show and recite that essay.
I like that.
The Raiders are God's team. And my team, I was forced to wipe away my tears with my terrible towel and accept the fact that RJ was right. Then, now, and always, I should have known that someone as handsome, charming, and definitely not an asshole as RJ would never steer me wrong. I'm ashamed I wasted my life cheering on the Steelers when I could have had myself and my sail to catch the autumn wind to glory. From the bottom of my heart, I thank RJ for helping me find the way, and I just hope he'll forgive me for a lifetime of questionable football judgment. Love you, RJ, but above all, I love the Raiders. There we go.
So that aired on SiriusXM Fight Nation the Monday after the Raiders kicked the dicks in the Steelers in week two to go 2-0. 5.5-point underdogs in week two. We had just beat the Ravens, a better team than the Steelers. The bookies never give us a shot, so we're 5.5-point dogs. I didn't even take the points against Jimmy. I said, let's bet it straight up. We win.
The money line, baby, straight up.
Just straight up. And he stayed true to his word. He did his bet.
It's refreshing to see that somebody will do the bet right away, you know, pay the penance right away.
For those of you on the podcast that didn't actually get to see the video, or the producer of that show, this girl, Kelly, fell over laughing listening to him.
She was shocked that
she could not hold it in. She was losing her shit listening to Jimmy recite the words I forced him to, because, you know, the Steelers can't play football as good as the Raiders.
It's true. It's damn true.
The next award is another person from the UFC world, Cub Swanson, longtime UFC veteran. He's your favorite fighter's favorite fighter, longtime veteran, diehard Raider fan ever since he was a little kid, grew up in Palm Springs, California. And again, a very, very early interview. We actually recorded this interview when I was in Abu Dhabi. You were back home and Cub was home. And this is Cub talking about his earliest memory of being a Raider fan.
And my earliest memory is, I had said this before, but I got sent home from school. I think I was in first grade. I had a Raider shirt on and they said it was gang affiliated and they sent me home from school. Huh? And I remember my stepmom was like, he's in first grade. Like, how dare you? And she like lit up the principal. I wasn't allowed to wear it. So that stuck in my mind, you know? So that's probably like my earliest memory of it.
I blame Ice Cube for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can imagine a young, like, like 6 or 7 year old Cub Swanson being like, really? That just makes me like the Raiders more.
Yeah.
I'm never taking this shirt off then. Right? How about that?
I need to get that respect. Yeah. My middle school is the same way in Huntington Beach, California, like Orange County, like suburban Orange County. Like, no, you can't wear Raiders gear. That Cowboys and Niners gear, that's fine. But clearly, you know, this blonde hair, towhead white boy in Huntington Beach is gangbanging with his, you know, Ken Stabler jersey. Like, Jesus Christ, man.
That's terrible, man. That's, you know what? Rap. The world loves to be a Raider hater, man. The world loves to hate on us. So it's all good. We're used to it. We've been Raider fans for years. So I know we're all used to it.
So that's the Learn 'em While They're Young Award. You learn that the world loves to hate the Raider fan from a very young age. And Cub Swanson learned it at 6 years old.
Very young. That's a very... A very strong lesson to learn that young in life. If I was able to like animate any one of our guests' stories, it would have been that one. A little 6-year-old cub with fucking tattoos and shit. Fucking walk, get kicked out of school for wearing a Raiders t-shirt.
He's in first grade. How dare you? Grade. That's a mom with that got your back. Side note. How funny is it watching back interviews from like a year and a half ago and just seeing like how terrible our graphics were, how awful our cameras were. Shit is our
cameras and like, I'm like fucking like the camera you see right in my fucking eyeball. Yeah.
It's like when you watch, you don't have to go back that far when you watch like NFL highlights. Just go back 7 years and it looks like it's in the Stone Age. It's crazy. You go back 15 years and you're seeing like that weird AstroTurf. You're seeing it's like in standard definition.
Their freaking pads are all weird and the freaking helmets are all fucked up looking.
Every third guy's got like a cowboy collar and like a cutoff like jersey. It's like looks weird. That's how I feel right now. And these were just like 18 months ago.
Yeah, that's crazy. It feels weird. That's crazy.
That's the Learn 'em While They're Young Award from good old.
Congratulations, Cub. Well deserved, sir.
The next one, Dan Helly.
The man.
NFL, does UFC, does a lot of stuff, has his own helipod. He was fantastic. He was really, really good. And he told
you might know him from the fantasy football daily, like the
on it's DirecTV.
like the red zone, but for fantasy football. Nice. That's what he does.
So it's on DirecTV. That's probably where you know him. He also calls Titans preseason games. And he's called regular season NFL games too. He had a great story about Aqib Talib, which we all want to hate, but let's be honest, he's actually a pretty good broadcaster. It'll take some healing, but we'll believe in him. Anyway, Dan Helly's talking about a time when he was broadcasting and he met Snoop Dogg. And he kind of gave us the after-school special a little bit. Here's the Puff Puff I'll Pass Award.
Snoop would come in and his area was kind of above the octagon at the Ultimate Fighter gym there. And he was smoking and drinking some gin and juice, and it got to the point where the smoke was spilling over into the octagon. And so the fans and the fighters were smelling all the weed, so they had to be like, Snoop, bro, you can't smoke during the fights. So I think he started vaping a little bit. So I remember after probably the second or third week, Snoop would go out. He had like a little trailer where he'd hang out with his guys, and that was when Sean O'Malley, he won his fight and he went in the trailer, and that's kind of like what, when he blew up, like he smoked with Snoop in the trailer, got his picture taken, and then everything like, oh man, this little kid's good. And then Snoop started talking about him.
That's like catching a pass from Joe Montana, smoking with Snoop, you know?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I remember I went in the trailer and, you know, talked to Snoop for a little bit and had met him a couple of times before, you know, from NFL Network. And he's good buddies, Willie McGinnis, who I work with a lot. They're both from Long Beach, grew up together, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I probably should not take a puff and get my picture taken with Snoop. May not be good for the NFL Network career. So I passed on that at that moment.
For the private collection. Private collection.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I didn't realize it till a couple of times when I was editing this. And Helly at the very end, he's like, so I passed, .. at that moment. He kind of alluded that it was like, you know what? I'll probably run into Snoop again. And then I'm going to go, because it's true. Like,
keep the offer open.
Yeah, like, you know, smoking a J with Snoop Dogg. Like, you know me, I'm not a very big pot guy. Like, just give me my beer. I'm good. That's not really my thing. But smoking a J with Snoop Dogg, it's like I said, it's like catching a pass from Joe Montana. You know what I mean? It's like
Ken Stabler.
Ken Stabler, right? It's like, I don't know. It's eating a steak made by Bobby Flay. You know, yeah, you're doing the thing with the guy.
It's the guy known for the thing that you're about to do.
Yeah.
That's it. You know,
a story you get to tell for the rest of your life.
Unemployed rest of your life.
Okay. You'll have the best story in the unemployment line. When you're hands getting down. Welfare, you can tell all the boys your story.
For sure. 100%.
So the very last one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to intro it? This is your special day, Soto. This is where you shine. Right.
All right. So RJ loves this shit. Now I was
everyone loves this shit.
To break it down, RJ was just being crazy, like fundamentalist over here on one side of the freaking fence, like over the top, fundamentalist, weighing himself down. And I hammed it up a little bit. I wasn't like this, like seriously this upset about it, but I just did it just because, like, you know, I thought it'd be funny.
If you were hamming it up, you hammed it pretty good.
I did. I wanted to. And then RJ would play it for no reason on his live shows, on our recorded show. He just kept playing the shit out of this thing. And then people were starting to talk to me on my live shows about it. I'm like, man, talking about that shit. So
in
here it is.
I don't know. I feel like this was you being you.
It was definitely me, but it was just turned up a little bit.
Because this was during the Steve Cofield interview. And you think I know how to push buttons. Try doing a show with Cofield for years. Like, that guy knows how to push buttons. And I think he sniffed this out about halfway through our interview. He's like, oh, I think we can get this Soto guy to have an aneurysm on air. And you did.
I'm not saying anything. Derek Carr can come and I will suck his dick.
Did you guys miss it? Fine,
I'll
play it.
I'm not saying anything. Derek Carr can come and I will suck his dick.
Easily the greatest 6 seconds this show has ever seen.
I mean, per second, it's the most impressive thing. It's this by far the shortest clip that we played, and I think it has the most impact.
It's like, sure. It's like me in the sack. You know what I mean? Just deliver it in as little amount of time as possible.
Have you seen those chicks, the videos the chicks are doing? Guys, I want to apologize to all of you. I was doing planks, and a minute is a long-ass time. Take that.
But I mean, I feel like this is something that had been building inside you since we started the show, and just like how much you hate Carr. And every time I bring up like how good he is and the stats that make him look good, and all you can do is think of like ways to shit on him. Like, there's little Soto inside of you that wanted to explode and do this for the last year and a half. And Cofield kind of gave you that opening.
Yeah. See, I get more like annoyed that you keep saying that I hate Derek Carr. Which I don't. I try to take a more objective view and not always look at the rosy part of what's going on, because he does have things that he needs to improve on. And, you know, I'm still looking for those things to be more consistent. That's the reason why. And you keep pushing this thing and everyone's like, oh yeah, this Soto's a Carr hater and this and that. I'm like, just because I don't blindly fucking lick his asshole everywhere he goes doesn't mean that I hate the guy. There's a big freaking swing in the middle.
No, Soto, you don't lick his asshole. You made it abundantly clear what you want to do.
I'm not saying anything. Derek Carr can come and I will suck his dick.
Yeah, you're not gay. You're not going to lick his asshole. You're just going to suck his dick.
No, I was. That was me. That was me imitating you.
Oh, okay.
That was me imitating you.
Must have gotten lost in translation.
No, because I said something and you're like, wait, I'm not saying anything. You're overreacting. And then that's when I said that.
So that's our awards from the first 100 episodes of the Autumn Windbags.
100
episodes.
Tune in Tokyo action.
I can't wait for what we're going to do, episode 200. Like I said,
strip club, bro.
Tuxedo, strip club. Titty bar.
I'll make it a strip club.
People joke about that. Cofield, he before the pandemic, he did like 3 shows a week at strip club in Vegas.
We can make it happen. We can definitely make it happen here.
We're not making this up. It's doable.
Hey, doable. Real quick. I talked to somebody, a buddy of mine, a buddy of ours, a couple weeks ago. He says that we can probably get into an establishment in the Huntington Beach area to do a live show. No. A regular bar. So put it in the, if you guys are local to Southern California, you guys might want to see that happen. Let us know. Maybe we'll make that happen one of these days.
All right. So congrats to us, patting ourselves on the back. Episode 100. I want to get to the last, obviously, like the draft just happened, the fifth-year extensions for the 2019 draft class, that happened. Mm-hmm. John Gruden's kind of popped up here and there in the news. I want to look at it this way. So as I'm sure you all have heard right now, but the news is about a week old. The Raiders are not going to extend any of the 3 players from the 2019 draft. Farrell, Abram, Jacobs. No extension. Mm-mm. They're still going to all be on the team this season. And I'm glad they are. Jacobs at $2 million steal. Jonathan Abram as a tackling machine in the box. Great. And Farrell as just kind of a second string rotational D lineman is fine. It's fine. But we're not giving these dudes $8 million. No.
I wouldn't give him $8 million total.
And so this kind of got me thinking. So Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler, when they came in, they obviously were going to make changes, right? And again, it's extremely unique that you're overhauling a coaching staff after a 10-win playoff season. It almost never happens, right? Very, very rare. Normally when you overhaul a coaching staff and a GM, it's because the team was terrible, you have the 3rd overall pick, and you're starting over, you're rebuilding. Not the case with the Raiders. 10-win team. Playoffs, franchise quarterback, 4 Pro Bowlers, great cap situation. You had all your draft picks at the time, brand new stadium, money's flowing in. No wonder McDaniels and Ziegler were like, yeah, let's go here, right?
Mm-hmm.
It still didn't stop Ziegler and McDaniels from doing a lot of cleaning house. And we were talking about it pre-show.
It just looks like from all the moves done is Ziegler, Champ, and McDaniels just didn't think too highly of this roster.
Yeah,
that there was some pieces that were good, but they radically changed this roster, especially defensively. We talked about it before the show. Like the defensive line is almost brand new. Nassib gone, Ngakoue gone, all our D tackles except for one gone. So it's almost a whole brand new defensive line. Linebackers until the end of the year, and that was really not. Divine Diablo ended up playing really well, but it was probably 50-50 between him playing well and Corey Littleton playing like dog shit. So they let him go. They cut him and ate some money. They cut Kwiatkowski and ate a little bit of money. Who knows how much Perryman's going to play as poor as he is against the pass. And you have to be able to – they run a lot of, cover 2 defense. Graham does, so he's got to be able to cover. Linebacking core is going to be a lot different from the beginning of last year. And the secondary is going to be really different too. They brought in a lot of guys, let Hayward go. Who knows what's going to happen with Mullen? Who knows what's going to happen with Abram? So the defense is going to look radically different, personnel-wise and scheme-wise. And offensively, we probably drafted 2 guys that are going to start within the next year or two. We got another guy that's a project for the practice squad that's a ginormous offensive tackle. We upgraded the receiver position, got a brand new. They didn't think very highly. They drafted a replacement for the running back, like the one of the shining stars on the offense. They're like, nah, it's not good enough. And so they went in there, and they, and from the outside looking in, it didn't look like they thought very much of this roster.
And so it got me thinking, as what John Gruden built, because he had 3 years to build something. What that something is up for debate, but he built something, a thing in the 3 years that he was there before he bounced unceremoniously the way that he did. And it got me thinking with the way that this, you know, specifically this draft, the personnel moves, and specifically the 2019 draft class with no extensions. And we both agree that's exactly what they had to do.
Yeah, that's no question. Exactly right.
Those three got to go for that price point. And it got me thinking, like, what's Gruden's legacy? And it's being chipped away. Because right when Gruden got, like, right when we were 3-0, 3-2, we're like, this is it. It's finally working. Gruden's got his shit together. He's kind of building the thing that we want. We're all kind of getting behind Gruden. He bounces unceremoniously, and there's some ups and downs last season. We get, you know, we got a winning record most of the season. We fall to 6-7. We all lose our shit. We win 4 games in a row, go to the playoffs, and we're all kind of wondering, all right, what's Gruden's legacy? Over this offseason, the top 10 biggest free agent acquisitions that Gruden brought in, all gone. The 2019 draft class, none of them extended. All the changes that you just brought up happened. And more and more and more, the more time that goes on, if I think of like 4 months ago, I would say it was like 60-40. I think a lot of Raiders fans still thought Gruden was onto something and could do something. Now I think we've passed that threshold where Raiders fans, more than half of Raiders fans are like, Gruden's trash. It was awful. Yeah. It was a waste of time. I think the longer time goes and the more this roster changes, the more people are going to look back. Certain legacies, the further away they are. Like, we looked at, like, Gruden's legacy before he coached the second time got better with time, right? Oh, yeah. Like, we looked back to Gruden's 98, 99, 2000. Like, man, what a time. What an offensive genius. Wow. Gannon to Rice, Gannon to Brown. Like, oh, it was awesome. And the more time left, he became more lore. He became like folklore. He became a legend the further time got away. Now the inverse is happening. The more time that passes, the worse John Gruden's legacy looks, specifically his second go around with the Raiders.
Yeah, I mean, for me, John Gruden's legacy is, I mean, his emails. But on the field, he's a firework, man. And he builds pieces, he puts pieces together that can't be held together for a long time because of how he gets the pieces in. It's a lot of free agents, a lot of flyers on guys that end up doing a lot better and overplay their contract. I mean, look at the guys, especially defensively, maybe not offensively, because when Ruggs left, we really didn't have a better receiver. But here's the deal. When Ruggs left, Renfro stepped up and became a better receiver than Ruggs. Okay, so you have that.
More productive for sure.
Oh, for sure, more productive. Sure, more productive. All defensively, the guys that stepped in for guys that got hurt or that were underperforming, the backup guys came in and played even better. It wasn't like they came in for a guy that was hurt and just kind of like, you know, glue and gum and sticks putting everything. No, they played better. So it's like, where was his ability to scout these guys and how well they'd actually play during the game? It's like you had them on your team, and because of circumstance, they ended up playing more, and they played better than the guy they replaced. It's like he's a firework, man. He builds these things that pop off really quick. But then we talked about all this depth. And it was the inverse. The guys that were – a lot of the guys that were backups that we thought gave us all this depth should have been starting, and the guys that were starting shouldn't be playing. And yeah. It's just rough.
I'm with you when you said that. I think outside looking in, like non-Raiders fans, like not non-Raiders fans that are in the bubble, right? Other 31 fan bases just general NFL fans, media, I think they're going to look at Gruden's legacy as the emails and how he got fired. I think that's going to be the first thing that people think of, right?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Inside the bubble, I think the first thing people will think of is just atrocious personnel decisions. Just god-awful first-round picks, expensive free agents that didn't fit, didn't work. I think that's going to be the first thing. Just all the money spent, the awful, you know, you traded away Khalil Mack, traded away Amari Cooper. Like, all right, well, he's
got
starting
nothing over, for it. Got nothing for it.
And he got
like long term, at least, like that's how you build a franchise. Like, look, guys, I understand that Jake was made the Pro Bowl, and you know, Abram had over 100 some odd tackles, and you know, Farrell hasn't shit the bed completely. He still plays a lot on special teams and whatever. I get that.
He sometimes misses the toilet, but he hasn't.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But look, Averett. Not Averett. What's his name?
You tell me. Who are you talking about?
The fucking Arnett. Sorry. Averett's the guy we have already.
Damon Arnett. Yeah.
Arnett was one of the picks that we got. Another pick that we got was what? Fucking was the Jacobs pick. Right? It's like
Jacobs and Abram were one was the Cowboys and one was
the Bears
for
and then the other one, Arnett,
the other one was Damon.
Yeah, Arnett was the other Khalil Mack one. Yeah. We got nothing from these guys long term. And that's how you build a dynasty. That's how you build a franchise moving forward that sustains success, is you have your top players play with you for more than one contract. You have that continuity. And then once the play drops off, then you can let it go, or maybe after the second contract or whatever. But we've traded these guys away and got basically nothing in return for them long term.
And I think that's what most infuriating for Raiders fans is, you know, other franchises I look at, like, oh, I love to make fun of, you know, the Browns rotating quarterbacks. And I love to make fun of, you know, the Jets never being able to find a coach. And like, that's what's fun for us on the outside, like storylines. When you're in the fan base, like, you care about what wins and losses are. And with Gruden, it was like he just could not get good players to save his life. Like, he just couldn't.
Exactly what you said. The resources that he had, given those resources, it's just his way of he drafted with ego. Yeah. I know the guys. This guy is the guy that I want. I don't care what anyone else says. I don't even care what my own scouts are saying. I want this specific guy. I don't care.
Yeah.
If he had a list of guys on his, like, okay, I want to pick these guys. That's a scouting report, like a composition book with a couple of names scribbled. I want these guys no matter what. So get me these guys. Everything else, go ahead and do what the fuck you want. That's what it looked like. Because no value. The trades he just squandered the free agents, gave him a ton of money, and then ended up like fucking Trent Brown. He ended up cutting him, and we lost like $9 million.
He acquired players the way my wife shops at outlet malls drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Just grabbing the first thing she sees as soon as he walks in. I love it. I have to have it. Bam.
If you've ever gone to Yogurt Land High, it's like, if this shit ends up being like this fucking tall, you're like, God damn.
And then I need 9 mounds of M&Ms poured on top of my 7 pounds of frozen yogurt.
Excuse me. Do you have any more of these cheesecake bites back there? It's like, sir, the whole thing is like, don't worry about what I got here. Do you have any more?
How about this? How about this question? What are the biggest positives that Gruden did in his tenure with the Raiders? What are the good? Because he didn't do everything terrible.
No. Look, he.
Finding Darren Waller.
Yeah, Waller's a big one. Waller's a big one.
Off the practice squad of Ravens. Not only did they identify him, they nabbed him and then signed him to an extension before he got huge. Like, they not only knew that they wanted him, they started him. And then signed him to a 4-year deal like immediately before he took off. Like, he's what, the 17th highest paid tight end or something?
Something like that. I was wondering why they didn't re-sign Cook off of what a great season he had.
Pro Bowl season.
Yeah. And I'm like, whoo, this guy's dope.
There we go. That's why.
So, like, Waller was good. Colton Miller, his first draft pick, ended up being a really good pick. He helped
a lot of good mid-round picks.
Yeah, he helped Derek Carr, Max Crosby, Renfro, like those guys. Who knows how involved he was with those Hobbs, like Diablo. Who knows how involved he was in the middle rounds? Mm-hmm. But, you know, on the field itself, he was able to teach discipline to like guys like Renfro and Waller on running their choice routes, because that's not a specific Gruden thing, and they're not that easy to run. You have to know what you're looking at. So the parts of that is going to be in McDaniel's system. So the continuity that they got and the familiarity that those two guys received working with Carr being able to read pre-snap, I think he's gone through the roof.
Sure.
I think he's regressed mightily. His turnovers, he's regressed. Mm-hmm. In the red zone, he's regressed. I think he regressed a little bit until this last year, checking down too much, because Gruden is like such a risk-averse safety, take 3 points and be okay with it type of guy.
It's like they're one or the other, right? He's either a check down guy with few turnovers, or he's just bombing these great 20-yard passes constantly and turning the ball over twice a game, right? It was like one or the other, right? You're not going to get the best of both or the worst of both.
And that's the thing, and that leads to Gruden. That's from a product of Gruden's scheme also, is there's built-in shots down the field, but there's not those like intermediate 15 plus yard throws that are built into that scheme, you know, consistently to have Derek Carr be able to have that type of throw, whether it's not like a short check down or a bomb. And that kind of hurt Derek Carr as well.
And we'll also never know what this season would have been if Gruden stayed around for all of it, if he wasn't targeted with those emails, or if he never sent those emails. Like, would we have been better without all of that anarchy, without changing coaches and Rich Bisaccia coming in as a special teams coordinator? Here's a crazy idea. Like, would Henry Ruggs have gotten in trouble if Gruden was still coach? Probably. I don't know. Like, maybe not. Would all that craziness, is all that craziness is what gave them the kind of team unity and motivation to go on that 4-game win streak late? Or would they have been even better? But they have been 14-3 with Gruden without having all that trouble and all that upheaval. Because normally the last couple seasons, they've tired out towards the end of the season. This last season, they got stronger as the season went on with that 4-game win streak. So that's a question. Man, I wish I had an answer. Like, you know, the crystal ball, or, you know, when I die, right, and I go to the pearly gates and I see Gabriel, and I'm just like, you know what? I want to know what what would have happened if I would have asked that girl out in high school. I want to know what would have happened if I invested in Bitcoin 10 years ago. And I want to know what would have happened in that 2021-2022 season if Gruden stayed as head coach.
You know what, man? Honestly, I don't think we would have survived that Giants, Chiefs, Bengals stretch. At that time of the year, losing those three games in a row, going to 6-5 at the time? I don't think they would have survived that. Honestly, I really don't think they would have survived that. I think with Gruden as head coach, you would have been like, oh, great, here it comes again. Whereas Bisaccia was like the whole, hey, guys, it's okay, we got to keep working on it. And he was the more calming influence. And guys weren't like afraid to do anything. Like, they weren't afraid to do things. It's like, you were afraid to do anything because if it was wrong, you were going to get cussed out.
Yeah.
Or Gruden was going to do X, or Gruden was going to do Y. So you were afraid to even do what you knew was right, because if it was wrong, it's like no one was 100% on what to do because of the fear of Gruden's wrath. With Bisaccia in there, they survived that 3-game stretch. I don't think they would have survived it with Gruden, honestly.
And even more, in a more pure, like, kind of practical sense, Gruden wore guys out because he was gung-ho 100 miles an hour. I love football more than I could ever love a woman. And in a 17-game season, 18-week season, that wears you out. And we heard players talk about how Bisaccia kind of felt that. Like, he listened to players in week 13, 14. It's like, we're exhausted. It's like, all right, extra rest day. Let's cut practice short. Hydrate. Like, let's do that instead. It paid off.
Yeah, and I just don't see, after losing three in a row, then winning one, then losing two in a row, getting blown out, get your shit pushed in by the Chiefs a second time. I just don't see us under Gruden being able to pick ourselves up by our bootstraps and win 4 straight to end of the year. Yeah. I just don't see that from him. We haven't seen it from him to end the year before.
I still can't believe we did it now. I still can't believe that run we went on.
Like, thanks, thanks COVID for the Browns. You really helped us out, especially defensively, like their defense. But the Broncos were the Broncos. They were who they were. We freaking barely got past them. It was 17-13, I think. The Colts game, thank God for Carson Wentz. Fucking just playing like crap and keeping us in the game and us being able to just, they're not a bad defense, but us being able to put up the points we needed to. And that Charger game, man, that Charger game was magic.
So the draft is done. And the draft has been talked about a million times. Obviously not like a sexy draft or a draft that's going to like get you an award. Or if you line up our draft picks versus other teams because we didn't have a first or second, like it's not franchise shifting type of draft, right?
It all depends on how you look at it.
Well, but it was, well, at least right this second, I think it's hard to look at like,
well,
the 2019 draft class were like, oh, these guys are going to carry us for years.
And yeah, right. Well, no, I mean, I never said that about fucking Farrell and Abram. Like, I knew them. I knew that was fucking bad picks from the very beginning.
We had the equity to do something special. And
true.
And it didn't happen, right?
Well, this time, we used our equity this time to get the best receiver in the league.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that was our draft class should include, like, it should start with Davante Adams. And then move down the rest of our picks.
Yeah, he's the best player that anyone could have ever gotten in the first or second round.
Yeah.
So.
And so I'm curious, which starters on the Raiders now should be most worried about having their jobs taken by this new rookie class? Now, again, for the first time since I can remember, we didn't draft guys to fill holes. We didn't draft our first and second and third round draft pick. We're like, all right, we desperately need a tackle. We desperately need a safety. We desperately need a running back. And these guys just like immediately, you're the starter. You're filling that hole. None of these six draft picks are those guys. They can be. They certainly can be. But we didn't draft anybody who's obviously going to be the starter. So I'm wondering, Soto, of these six guys, Dylan Parman, Zamir White, Neil Farrell Jr., Matthew Butler, Thayer Munford, and Britton Brown. Of these six players, which starters should be looking over their shoulder at these young guys and thinking, I might lose my job to one of these six guys?
Our interior three offensive linemen should be worried. Mm-hmm.
Whoever about, they may be, right? We're still not sure.
Whoever they may be right now, yeah. Parham and Munford. Munford probably will get kicked inside. He played a lot better, especially pass protection wise, at guard than he did at tackle. So I think those two guys, are going to be starters fairly quickly, if not this year, by the latest to begin next season, the following season. Zamir White looks like he's going to be the heir apparent at running back, or one of them at least. I just don't see them bringing back Jacobs. I don't see Jacobs signing for the amount that he would sign for being a complimentary back. Neil Farrell basically is a carbon copy, just a little bit bigger, a little bit taller and a little bit bigger of Jonathan Hankins. Jay Hankins is in his last. He signed a one-year contract. So 2023, he's going to be a free agent. So I see Farrell taking over that position. Butler may or may not. I don't see him starting. You know, I don't really see where he fits in at tackle. But, I mean, I don't see Britton Brown being anything more initially than a special teamer type of guy. But, I mean, I definitely – that's why I said I told you on your live show, we got four future starters out of this draft.
Which is insane considering we only have six players and we didn't start drafting until pick number
third
nine.
Third round, yeah.
Third round, right? And we traded down, right? Like we went down from what, 87, 88?
86 to 90, yeah.
Down to 90, right? And we did some trade downs and we did some trade ups. So this is how I look at it. My first thing that I think about is Zamir White and the Josh Jacobs relationship. Because if Josh Jacobs is the type of man that I think he is, he's looking at this not getting his fifth-year extension. And if he had half a brain about him, he'd realize the Raiders aren't going to give him $8 million.
Or anything close to that.
what you know, the money that he's supposed to get as a Pro Bowler in your fifth year extension as a running back, right? Like the calculated dollar amount that he was supposed to get. That Pro Bowl is what screwed him. That's what screwed him over. Because if it was half that, then I think the Raiders would be on the fence a little bit, right? $4 million for a
That's still a little rich for a complimentary back. Because you have to remember the scheme.
But it's a debate at that point, right? Scheme,
yeah.
At that point, it's a debate. Like, do we keep him or not? $8 million, gone, right?
Yeah, no way.
And so if he's the man that I think he is, a good man, a guy that's fought, clawed to get where he is, he's going to realize, hey, I got this 1 year to prove I'm the man. To prove to the other 31 franchise, and this one too, we could still re-sign him after the fifth year once he's on the free agent market, to prove that I'm the man, that I can be your bell cow. I can be your starting running back. I've got this year to prove it, and I'm going to. I'm going to prove I'm not going to get hurt. I'm going to get better at the backfield, and I'm still going to be the great in-between the tackles running back that everybody knows that I am. Zamir White comes in, takes a third of his carries. He's the one I'm going to worry about. Because I think with Parham, I think you're right with Dylan Parham, how he's – I think he might start over some guard here eventually. But these were all starters that were on shaky ground to begin with. Like, I don't think John Simpson, anyone wanted him to be the starter. Leatherwood, who knows where he's going to go, probably right guard. He was supposed to be the right tackle. Brandon Parker got all this money. Who knows? This is a whole shaky area. Josh Jacobs was solidified – RB1. I think he's going to lose a third of his touches to Zamir White. And that could drastically, let's say he only gets 600 yards rushing this season. And he still plays okay, right? Still plays fine, right? Plays pretty well. Does not a terrible down season, but he only gets
130 touches.
130 touches instead of 200 something.
Yeah, man. It's not just a possibility. It's a certainty, especially lately. McDaniel has gotten away from that. I mean, how long ago did Corey Dillon play and LeGarrette Blount? Like, how long ago was that? Were they the guys that like, they carried the ball 200 times, 250 times? Mm-hmm. They don't have that kind of guy anymore. The Patriots hadn't had that guy in 10 years. And that's not his system. He understands if I want to manipulate my roster cap-wise, I need to get a bunch of young running backs that have similar skill sets so I can use a bunch of them. I don't wear any one of them out. I help myself injury-wise. I don't have to pay him a lot of money. I just keep recycling them. And that's his philosophy. And that was going to happen to Jacobs regardless of who they drafted. He wasn't going to get as many carries. Because he brought in a bunch of guys, too.
Who should be more worried about their starting job? Andre James at center or John Simpson at left guard? Because Parham, like he's the Swiss Army knife, right? Like when he came into Memphis, he was like a linebacker D end. And then he played guard. And
then he hit that training table.
Then he got you know, beefed up.
Yeah.
Then he played guard. Then he played tackle. In the Senior Bowl, he played center, and that's where everyone's kind of assuming he's going to play in the NFL,
mm-hmm.
is center. Now, Andre James is making more than the guards,
mm-hmm.
and Parham hasn't played hardly any center, but everyone's thinking that's where he's going.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder who's more worried about Parham taking their spot.
I would say that James is a better center than Simpson is a guard. And for that reason, Parham would be most useful at the guard spot. James has, 2 years left on his contract?
Mm-hmm.
So after this next season, I think they can cut him loose for almost nothing if they wanted to, and then slide in Parham at center in his second season. Because the thing is, it's not just snapping the ball, man. Like, especially, you know, that center, you think about like the Patriots offensive lines. They've had like strong, solid offensive lines, good centers. And they do a lot. They're asked to do a lot. So him learning from the guard spot, what it's expected of the center in a Josh McDaniels system, I think it'd be good for him to be set at guard first, and then transition to center later on. But if he is that much better than James from the beginning, who knows? James might kick over to guard.
That guard center guard position could just be juggling for like
a season
and a half. Like it could.
For sure.
All over the place, which I want. I would talk about forever. I want continuity, but it's looking like it's going to be just the little like ball under the cup game, right?
Yeah.
For the next season and a half, we'll see.
Well, yeah, like I said, at the end of after we did that episode welcoming the guys in, shit, man. Like the one thing we have to really hang our hat on is. The guys that are going to be playing are the best players. It's not about your draft position. We don't care where you were drafted because we didn't draft you. Mm-hmm. We want to put the best five, the best combo of five. That's what we're going to play.
First up, Big Hands Phil. I don't know if he's bragging or...
That means, right? He's got big gloves.
I never realized how much Mike Florio hates Derek Carr. It makes me question all of Mike's comments/stories and how much truth there is behind them compared to just plain old lies because he didn't like someone. So again, this goes back to two shows ago. We talked about how Mike Florio's had a half decade long vendetta against Derek Carr. And this is example 832 of why pushing some kind of hate-filled agenda for somebody and ignoring the facts. One, it makes you look dumb, but two, it's like, well, if he's full of shit, because I know Derek Carr and the Raiders. Like I do Derek Carr and the Raiders full time. Like I know what he says, what he does. Like I'm educated in this field, right? Mike Florio is more educated than me in the contracts for the Jets and for the, other things. He knows more than me. But when I know he's so wrong about something, it makes me wonder, what else is this guy wrong about?
Yeah, for sure. It really calls his credibility into question. Mm-hmm. Because it's normally people aren't light switches where they just flick shit on and off, right? So his bullshit meter doesn't flick on just when it's Derek Carr.
Yeah.
That spills into other things too.
Oakland Raider alumni chimes in. As long as Derek Carr is quarterback, the Raiders will never win a playoff game. Are there still a lot of people like that? Is that still like a big thing? Because it used to be almost like half and half for a while.
Yeah. So look, man, I am critical of Derek Carr as much as the next guy who's critical of Derek Carr. What I said was, he needs more than what he has to be successful. He's shown us that he's not that guy to be able to lift an entire offense, maybe pieces of that offense, but not an entire offense and overcome certain circumstances. We've given him that. He has a better scheme, a better coordinator. He's got better weapons now. So he has what he's needed. I don't understand where he's coming from with that.
Well, like look at the last two times the Raiders made the playoffs with him. If he didn't break his leg Christmas
against the Colts, kicked the shit out of Houston when we played them earlier in the year.
Our last game, we get home playoff advantage in the playoffs. And even if we lose that last game, we beat the Texans with Derek Carr.
Handily.
Easily. Like we kill the Texans and we win a playoff game. This season, there were what, seven play, like the bungle in the jungle in Cincinnati. If Renfro doesn't slip on that third down, if we don't have the dumbest play call with nobody in the end zone on fourth down in the final play of the game, like we're a millimeter away from winning that game. So this whole idea, it's like, man, he's just this giant dead weight that's holding us back. Like there's just so few people that I think still feel that way. And because he's Derek Carr and this team's keep giving us evidence that, again, all 53 players on this roster are making this roster and this team better. And then, like, this evidence that Derek Carr by himself is dragging this team down and keeping it from winning in the postseason, the evidence of that doesn't exist anymore.
If Derek, if Josh McDaniels can get Derek Carr to just exhale and just like wash all of that fucking angst that Carr, that Gruden beat into him, and he's just able to play, I think we'll be a lot better offensively.
Last one from Jeff Garrison. You guys are freaking great.
Woo!
I saved the compliments for the last one.
Like it.
Like Soto said early in the video, we can find a guy to fill that hole. And RJ said midway through, whether your job is giving hand jobs under the bridge, whether intentionally or unintentionally, we can always count on you guys to make dirty jokes. You guys are hilarious.
Ah, he's so right.
I mean, when you're right, you're right. That's an educated viewer right there.
Yeah, man.
Jeff Garrison.
For sure.
And I wanted to end with that because, again, 100th episode of the Autumn Windbags.
It's all about me. It's all about him.
They're doing it over a year and a half now. We started, what, week five or six of two seasons ago?
No, it was late. Week 12. It was the Jets game. After the Jets game.
So week 12 of two seasons ago, we got started.
Where was that week? Hang on. Hold, please.
Kind of finding our footing. Still figuring out what we're going to do. And we're almost approaching 3,000 subscribers now on YouTube. No idea what our podcast numbers are. I haven't looked it up in a while. But there was a comment we had in like our fourth or fifth show. And someone said, hey, when you guys make it big.
Yeah, week 12.
You gotta promise that you're going to stay brash.
Stay the same. Stay yourselves. Raunchy. I don't know any other way to be.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing is I think there's so often a polished kind of look to broadcasting and shows, and I want normal human interaction. That's what I want.
People feel that, man. They feel that this guy's not being himself. Like it's, you can't like fake that shit for like so long, you know, especially when you're talking about things that you're emotionally like tied to. If you're like a news reporter and just fucking reading the shit off of a teleprompter, that's, you're not emotionally tied to that. It's just words. If you're talking about your feelings and how you feel about something that you're emotionally tied to, you can't fake who you are for that very long. Your real self is going to come out.
That's why all my lies to strippers, it never lasts longer than the 2 or 3 hours. I can't fake it that long.
The race car driver or something?
I say I own a ranch 200 miles south of Butte, Montana. I learned all these like stats about Butte. So I can like keep my lies.
You mean butt?
Butt, buddy. Montana. Buddy Montana.
Booty Montana.
All right. That's it for episode 100. 100 of the Autumn Windbags. Thank you so much for those of you who have been around early and been along for the whole ride. Welcome those who are joining us late. I promise we'll make it worth your while. And until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode and all 100 episodes of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you check us out on YouTube, social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the usual spots. And we'll see you at episode 200 after episode 101 and all the other ones. Until next time, later.